your advisement, and the court will proceed to the fifth case, Hemmer versus the Indiana State Board.
I don't want to steal Judge Fahm's thunder.
He's right to do it here. We had a vacated case, so that causes my failure to call the appropriate case. Mr. Gary?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is James M. Gary. I'm counsel for the plaintiff appellant Stephen D. Hemmer in this matter. We appeal from the judgment of the United States District Court, Southern District of Indiana, New Albany, that granted the defendant appellee's motion to dismiss this case under Rule 12. Our issue is very straightforward. We have a district court that has concluded that Dr. Hemmer's case sought to reverse or modify a state court judgment, and consequently it was barred by the Rooker-Feldman action, Rooker-Feldman doctrine. Your Honor, briefly, as I said, that this issue is straightforward. We don't have anything elaborate before the court today. The facts the court we have presented already to the court are very simple. Fundamentally, Dr. Hemmer has 18 years as a supervisor and a veterinarian with this agency. After 18 years of service, he's brought up on charges with regard to travel vouchers. Following that, he has a serious motor vehicle accident that leaves him with cognitive impairment, serious head injury, a number of different issues, treated by neurologists, psychiatrists, and a number of other health care professionals. Before the pre-deprivation hearing can be held, his physician, his treating physician, notifies the defendant appellee and says, this man has got serious issues, should not go forward with the pre-deprivation hearing. At that point in time, they went forward. They never requested any medical records and asked for any further information, or no depositions or discovery were taken with regard to the mental issue. Subsequently, of course, the Social Security Administration found that he was disabled as of the date of the motor vehicle accident. But he had to go forward in the pre-deprivation hearing. We went ahead at that time, of course, and under the authority of Cleveland Board of Education versus Loudermill, looked at the issue of was he denied due process rights by this pre-deprivation hearing that he was required to undergo as a result. At the time, he had suffered this very serious head injury and cognitive injury. It goes before, under the administrative office, the AOPA, it goes before SEAC on appeal. The State Employees Appeals Commission then hears it in a bifurcated hearing, two separate hearings, and comes to the conclusion that there have been no due process violations, and in fact that he had adequate notice and an adequate opportunity to respond to the charges in the pre-deprivation hearing. From that point, of course, is where we are now with this court. I, as his counsel, then filed the appeal with the Gibson Circuit Court, and at that time, I actually attached my petition, copies of the order in question, and actually copies of both briefs that were utilized by the SEAC in reaching their order. I did not file the full record as required by statute within a 30-day time frame at the time I filed the appeal with Gibson Circuit. Interestingly enough, in case the judges are interested, at the time the motion to dismiss was filed by the defendant appellee, citing subject matter jurisdiction. Judge Palmer at that time listened and heard my argument with regard to the fact that I have got a significant amount of the record that I have attached to my petition. And if need be, I will go ahead and present this appeal based on the record I have that is more than adequate to deal with those issues. Judge Palmer went forward with the case, overruled the motion to dismiss, and no other motion was made by the defendant appellee. Could have taken an appeal from that point in time, but it wasn't done. At that point, I moved for an extension of time to file the entire record. It was granted without objection, and the entire record was filed. The Gibson Circuit Court had the entire record and obviously combed through it in writing this 10-plus page opinion in favor of Dr. Hemmer. At that time, Judge Palmer found there were due process violations with regard to the pre-deprivation hearing and gave us a very resounding decision that allowed the case to go back to SEAC. At that point, of course, then the defendant appellee files an appeal of that decision to the Indiana Court of Appeals. The Indiana Court of Appeals, at that point in time, I presented my argument that basically Illinois, Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky. Surrounding states don't look at a record as jurisdictional. And instead, I argued that the filing of the appeal itself was jurisdictional. But statutorily, that's not correct in Indiana. And they looked to their legislature to change it, and so they did, and they stayed with that law. The appeal, therefore, reversed Judge Palmer's decision. And transfer was denied.
And reversed, and basically erased the decision below, didn't it?
Made it void, Your Honor. There was no decision below at that point in time.
Well, I mean, it took a long time to get there, but that's where we are.
That's exactly
now,
right.
Now the question is, obviously then it's not a Rooker-Feldman issue.
That's exactly my argument.
Well, we took a long time to get there.
I apologize.
So what is it?
What it is it's a case that should have been allowed to go forward in the district court, Your Honor. I brought a case, you know, with regard to these 14th Amendment issues that we've raised. And, yes, of course, it involves these issues that came up in the administrative hearing. But we don't have a decision by Gibson Circuit. The only decision we have is the Indiana Court of Appeals decision that basically says, procedurally, Mr. Gary, you filed a flawed appeal. So, therefore, it doesn't stand.
Then what kind of a case would it be before the district court? Wouldn't it be a Section 1983?
Yes, Your Honor, it would involve Section 1983, just as my opponents have argued in sense, because I have argued those due process issues under the 14th Amendment. And that's what would be there then in the district court.
But I don't know why we would look at this really any differently than a procedural default, say in a habeas corpus case where the state reason is some adequate independent state grounds for preventing a federal court from getting involved in the case.
Judge Evans, the only thing I can point to, of course, is what this court has obviously said in the Van Harken versus City of Chicago case, which Judge Posner obviously came back and said, with regard to these administrative decisions, we're not going to let Rooker-Feldman be a bar to those types of cases.
This is a decision of the Indiana Court of Appeals saying that it was procedurally defaulted. Whether right or wrong, I mean, that's what they said. So if you come now in federal court, really, and taking a bite on the merits of the case, doesn't that create some...
Your Honor, it's a good question. I think it's at the heart of this issue. And what our position is this. We look to see what Dr. Hemmer has had as we stand here today. He's had facts with regard to the underlying issues, with regard to the violations of his due process rights heard by one tribunal, one state court, the Gibson Circuit Court, and now it does not stand.
Why was that case in that Gibson court for county court for 4 years?
And the court alluded a little bit to it, Your Honor, as to the court's docket and the various and sundry motions for additional time for the record, actually. And by the way, I'll say very briefly, that also goes to just one of the issues that we had raised with the Court of Appeals, and that is it's impossible to take a week and a half record and get it transcribed fully in 30 days. Obviously, everyone's going to file a motion for an extension of time, which I failed to do. But regardless, it was an extensive record, and the court reporter that was utilized, it took some significant amount of time to get it prepared as well. It did stay there a long time.
Well, I guess my question is, if it's, maybe that is, there's some sort of a procedural default and that's the end of it, but if it's the question of whether this Court of State, Indiana Court of Appeals, basically erased the decision, said, you said the lower court had no jurisdiction for this, then I don't know that there is a decision in the state court. That's where my question is. And then without going to federal court and trying to overrule a state decision, there isn't any state decision. And the reason I ask is there a Section 1983 question? Because then you have a different issue, and that might be an 11th Amendment issue.
Well, and Your Honor,
and that's what's, the way it went for the first time to the district court under the ADA, this time it would be under constitutional issue, but it's still against the state, and wouldn't that then be barred by the 11th Amendment. So I'm really, none of this is briefed. I'm just wondering if it could then be affirmed for a different reason.
No, Your Honor, I apologize. I respectfully disagree with the fact that based on the way, and of course we did not really deal with the argument head-on because of the fact it wasn't one of the issues that we had on appeal. But I see what you're saying is we did not go behind the complaint other than the facts that we've outlined for the judges this morning. We did not go behind to look at what might happen once we had a chance, actually at some discovery, some time to either finish our pleading process or amend our pleadings. But I respect the court's argument on that point, realizing that if we looked ahead and speculated, might it not be barred as the ADA and ADA claims were? We do not believe it would have been barred, and it was not an issue that we addressed in this particular motion. As the judges know, the court dismissed based on Rooker-Feldman. Sole reason that this case was dismissed on the motion.
All right.
I notice my time's short. I'll go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. Mr. Steiner?
May it please the court. I might start with the last comment the counsel made, and that was that the only matter that was addressed to the district court was Rooker-Feldman. That's not really correct. If you look at district court document, I believe it's 11, which was our memorandum in support of our motion to dismiss. The state raised a number of reasons why the case shouldn't go forward, and one of which was the 11th Amendment issue relating to the fact that the state was the only named defendant in a Section 1983 action. The state also raised issues relating to a statute of limitation, anticipating that if you can't sue the state, you'd have to sue an individual. And to sue an individual more than 10 years after the alleged deprivation of rights was going to be something that you really couldn't do. So there would be serious statute of limitation and a serious 11th Amendment questions with this case beyond Rooker-Feldman. We only really addressed the Rooker-Feldman issue in our brief because that was the basis for the decision of the district court.
Are you suggesting that we ought to get a record on the other issues from the district court, because it does appear that this may not be a Rooker-Feldman matter?
Well, we believe it is a Rooker-Feldman, at least it's arguably.
Where's the decision on the merits, Mr. Stein?
Well, there's no decision on the merits, but looking at the case law that I've seen relating to Rooker-Feldman, the cases don't suggest there absolutely has to be a decision on the merits of the particular issue that was raised. There was a determination made in the Indiana Court of Appeals on this matter, and it was a determination that settled this litigation with great finality in the Indiana courts. It was a decision that there was an attempt to take on transfer to the Indiana Supreme Court, and it was a decision that could have been taken, or attempt could have been taken, to take to the United States Supreme Court. We don't believe that it probably would have been successful, but some argument could have been made about depriving Mr. Hemmer of the opportunity to raise his due process claim that was in the state courts through the procedural bar that did occur, and that was determined by the Indiana Court of Appeals. And if you look at the case law, the one thing that I was looking for in any of these cases was something that said that there has to be a decision on the merits of the particular, federal claim or whatever claim that it's being brought in the state courts and then is being brought again in a federal district court proceeding. And the cases don't say that it has to be on the merits. It says there has to be a decision made, and that, in essence, we look to see whether the individual is attempting to seek some sort of collateral attack, make a collateral attack, or seek some sort of collateral review regarding that decision. And we submit that the district court got it right in that respect, because what we had here is we had a determination, as counsel indicated, in the agency, in the appeal agency that deals with these kind of matters for the state of Indiana. It went to a state trial court. Mr. Hemmer actually won in that forum, and then he went to the Court of Appeals and he lost. And he lost on the basis of a determination that he had not effectively pursued the prosecution of the matter in the state trial court, and as a result, you know, he had no right to proceed further with the matter, and they reversed.
Well, didn't it say
the determination?
The trial court had no jurisdiction?
Well, the trial court initially, of course, had jurisdiction over the case. When he filed it, it lost the jurisdiction. I would contend it's a lot like a failure to prosecute. The statute sets up what you have to do in order to successfully prosecute that kind of appeal to a court in Indiana. And in this case, Mr. Hemmer did not properly prosecute that matter. And at that point, that was a procedural default, in essence, and that was determined by the Court of Appeals. And, of course, the upshot of that was that, in effect, the decision that was made by the agency, by the appeal agency, the Appeals Commission, was effectively affirmed because the decision of the trial court was vacated. Therefore, the decision of the agency stood.
I don't really know the answer to it, but it just seems that what you've got here is the guy, he gets into state court and wins even without all the documents he wanted, et cetera. And then it goes to the Court of Appeals, and they said, you shouldn't have decided this case in the first place because you don't have jurisdiction because he didn't get this and that, whatever. So what you're saying is, well, he got his foot in the door just far enough to lose.
Well,
would you still maintain that this is a Rooker-Feldman issue?
Well, I think that I think that there is a basis for affirming this on Rooker-Feldman, because I think there's a quotation from this court's Homolo decision. I don't recall that any of these judges, any of you were on this panel. You may have been, but I don't think you're the writer. But it was stated like this in discussing why the Rooker-Feldman applied in that particular case, and it's in our brief. Plaintiff who loses and tries again encounters a law of preclusion. The second complaint shows that the plaintiff wants to ignore rather than upset the judgment of the state tribunal. A defendant who has lost in state court and sues in federal court does not assert injury at the hands of his adversary, asserts injury at the hands of the court. And the second suit, therefore, is an effort to obtain collateral review. It must be dismissed not on the basis of preclusion, but for lack of jurisdiction. What we believe that the district court understood, and what I think we were trying to argue to the district court, that the district court believed that Rooker-Feldman applied, is that there is a collateral attack going on regarding the decision of the state courts in this matter. There was a determination made. This issue unquestionably was squarely presented in the administrative proceeding and then in the state courts that is attempted to be brought in the federal district court. Mr. Hemmer lost that proceeding on this procedural default basis. There's no case law that indicates that Rooker-Feldman is absolutely limited to situations where there's a adjudication on the merits of the claim.
Maybe not, Mr. Steiner, and I'm not one of the pulls cases that counsels haven't been familiar with, so I'm going to ask you if you're familiar with Verizon Maryland versus Public Service Commission of Maryland. It's a 2002 Supreme Court case.
Is that a telecommunications case?
Yeah.
I think I have seen that, but I don't
really recall.
There's
a footnote. There's a footnote 3 there where the court says, speaking of Rooker-Feldman, the doctrine has no application to judicial review of executive action, including determinations made by a state administrative agency. I think it kind of cabins our ability to expand Rooker-Feldman to where you might want to take us.
Well, the one thing I do think is true that I'd like to say, I don't think this court's decision in Van Harken, where it talks about you can't apply Rooker-Feldman, of course, where you only have an administrative decision. We have more than that here. That's what we're.
You don't want to back it up to that. You want to stop where they get their foot in the door and
that's
says,
right.
And says that, well, you lose because you didn't get your act together, period. But you lose in the state
court,
as opposed to wiping out that decision for lack of jurisdiction,
right,
which then pushes it back to the administrative agency.
What happened in the Van Harken situation, of course, was that they didn't take it at all to the courts, And in that situation, if you don't take it to the state courts, you have every right to go into the federal district court with your claim. It was the fact that they took it into courts, got a decision, lost. We believe they're attempting the collaterally review that we believe allows Rooker-Feldman to apply, and we would ask that the district court decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Mr. Gary, your time had expired, but you may have an additional minute. You had several questions.
Very briefly, in response to some of the points that Judge Mannion had just raised with regard to easing your foot into the door, there's not one decision that has been presented to this court whereby there wasn't, in fact, a judicial determination by the state court that ended up triggering the application of Rooker-Feldman. Every one of these decisions has done that. There is no exception. We have not been able to scour the cases and find an exception. Obviously, Mr. Steiner did a very effective job, but to try to argue both sides of the coin, either that Gibson Circuit Court lacked jurisdiction or it did not. Under the ruling by the Indiana Court of Appeals, it had no jurisdiction from the beginning, before the foot or the toe slid into the door. Consequently, there was no state court decision there to go back on.
Yeah, well, what's next then?
Your Honor, with regard to what's next, one of the things I respectfully would represent to the court is it's not dealt with in our appeal, but obviously we dealt with these separate issues that the district court chose not to look to when it dismissed this case. One of them was the 11th Amendment issue, and we dealt with that, and we actually briefed that. And the court chose to not look at it and not deal with it, and we felt that we had other issues that would give us the right to stay in district court on this fact situation that we presented on behalf of Dr. Hemmer.
Are you saying that we could look at the 11th Amendment since it was before the district court?
Your Honor, that was part of what was there in the motion. With regard to the court's decision, what I would at least respectfully argue to these judges is that this judge chose the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine as the reason to say that this motion to dismiss must be granted.
But we can sometimes consider affirm on other reasons if it's at least, I guess I don't want to say preserved, but at least somebody raised it. And I don't think that would, I mean, an 11th Amendment probably you wouldn't want to hear about that either.
Well, and, Your Honor, one of the things I would also assert is that with regard to another type of disposition, a ruling on a motion for summary judgment, or another type where we've had more of a record for this court to look at and see what we've done, but on a motion to dismiss, it would be my urging that because it ended before we really had anything in the case, and this is the only reason that this court gave for ending it, because of that, yes, I ask on behalf of Dr. Hemmer that issue be the one that this court looks to give some clarity to. I realize it's a tough issue, not an easy one. I've brought something that I suppose has never been raised, perhaps. But that is the reason this court picked.
Are you suggesting, Ms. Gary, it was fully briefed, those issues, at the trial level?
But we had, I believe, also asked, please, if I need to stand correct on this, but it's my recollection from the record that we had asked for oral argument with regard to this case. So when I say fully briefed, Your Honor, we wanted to bring additional information to the court before the ruling was actually entered.
Well, in response to Judge Mannion's inquiry, Mr. Gary, are you urging that we not remand it, that it would be done addressed here on the record? Or?
No, I would urge you, Your Honor, to remand this case to the district court.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. The case is taken under advisement.